This is Totally Heroes. This is our theme song. Yeah, we're Totally Heroes. Well, you've got Dave, and he's the host. We're sorry about that. But hey, there's always Shank, and he's kind of cool. He's like a really techie guy. And then there's Brian. Well, he is the Jason Statham of Lord of the Rings Online. Really doesn't make any sense. But we talk about video games on Totally, Totally Heroes. Well, this song really stinks, but the show is awesome. Listen to Totally, Totally Heroes by QGN. That stands for Quest Gaming Network. Yeah, Totally, Totally Heroes. Gonna start right now. We promise it's better than this theme song. Take it away, Dave. Take it away, Shank. Brian, join in too. Totally Heroes, going live right now.
Welcome to Totally Heroes, the QGN news show where you have a say. Your game's right here. My name is Dave D-Enforce Adams, and I'll be your host tonight through the wonderful world of gaming. Or, you know, just people who want to fight over nonsensical things that happen to coincide with gaming. It's usually how it goes. Also with us tonight, back from the dead, Zombie Brian.
Yes, I'm now an undead participant on Total Heroes. It's good to be here.
Yeah, that's right. Silent Fury 007 himself, also known from IGN fame for having his money stolen.
Yes. Yeah. This is not how I imagined making it on the pages of IGN for the very first time, but I am there. I had my money stolen by Direct Song, and IGN wrote all about it. So,
well, that's good. Also with us tonight, as he is most every night, the one, the only, Shank Tank.
Hello, Internet. What is going on? We have a pretty sweet show. First of all, our snazzy new, I should point, I think this way. I don't know. I have no idea if I'm mirrored. We have a pretty snazzy new layout. If you're on the podcast, well, you can't see it. So just take our word for it that it's cool. We have some pretty cool news for you this week. Actually, it's kind of all over the place this week. We've got Capcom and Twitch announcing a new collaboration, which will actually be hitting our site later today. And second on our list, as it's either like either Brian or I get one of these stories like at least once a week, and Microsoft just can't catch a break. We're going to tell you about the latest gut punch in a look coming up in a little bit. Speaking of Microsoft, on the flip side, a good thing, we've got DirectX 12 announcement, which is coming up, which is imminent, and I'll tell you exactly what it is and what you can expect. And then, of course, we have a cool Hero Play section where we're actually bringing on the Grand Con to talk about a little game that has to do with a stick of truthiness. And, of course, your question of the week. This one is actually a bit more near and dear to this the core of the show. So, looking forward to getting a pretty good show out for you guys today. And with that, I'm going to turn it back to Dave.
Awesome. Well, first things first, we're going to talk about a little collaboration that we've been made aware of between Capcom and Twitch. They're collaborating to deliver the Capcom Pro Tour, the first ever Street Fighter-focused fighting game league, comprised of a combination of premier events, ranking tournaments, and online tournaments. The Capcom Pro Tour establishes a year-long foundation for the fighting game community, culminating in the grand finals at the Capcom Cup this December. The tour will focus solely on the Street Fighter 4 series, with the early portion of the tour featuring Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition, then transitioning to Ultra Street Fighter 4 after its release in June. All premier events retain their independence and core values and will be collaborating with Capcom and Twitch to deliver the Street Fighter live streams via the Capcom Fighters Twitch channel. Ranking events are comprised of both trade shows and independent tournaments, which are managed and streamed separately from the Capcom Pro Tour tournament. The tournament organizers may apply to become a ranking event by emailing CapcomProTour@Capcom.com. Anyway, the current lineup of ranking events includes SoCal Regionals, February 28th to March 2nd. And that's in Los Angeles, California. PAX East, which if you don't have a ticket, you ain't going to get one. That's April 11th through 13th in Boston, Mass., which people from Boston suck. Ain't that right, Shane?
Yeah, you can suck it.
No, we love Boston. Kind of. E3, which is June 10th through 12th, and that's at Los Angeles, California again. And San Diego Comic-Con, which is July 24th through 27th in San Diego. So, guys, I have to ask y'all about this. What do you think about bringing the old school fighting games, you know, your character's on your side of the screen, my character's on my side of the screen, let's totally, you know,
bro out,
like, Rock and Rumble robots, whatever the hell they're called. I'm going to smack you in the head and the head's going to pop up, kind of thing. That kind of fighting game.
Oh, soccer boppers?
Rock'em Sock'em robots, those. That's what I think of whenever I look at a game like these Street Fighter kind of games. What do you think of these transitioning in from, you know, the occasional tournament to being a full-fledged yearly televised, well, you know, as close as we're willing to look at television, kind of tournaments?
This is, honestly, I don't know much about fighting games, but what I do know about fighting games is not really about the games itself, but the culture surrounding it. And because I used to work with a guy at my previous company who was like about my age, but he was huge into like these fighting games and like these old school kind of games. And I mean, man, I know the audience for these kind of games is huge, like really just it's huge. So I think bringing this to the Capcom Fighters Twitch channel there, and you know these specific games, and also like bringing the events to these publicized places here, like with PAX and E3, etc. I think that's a huge deal, and if anything, it's just going to bring them more publicity and more revenue, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, I, from a business standpoint, this is a fantastic deal. If you're a fan of these types of games, this is also a fantastic deal because you get to see more of it and at a much larger scale, I would think. I know, I think the biggest event right now for this is Evo, which takes place in Las Vegas. You know, seeing these at much more publicized events, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it'll be huge, and it's just going to bring more attention and bring more people into this culture and the fighting series of games.
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, I was never really into these games. I didn't care. I didn't play them that much. But you know, I'd be at the arcade. I'd be over there playing, you know, like NBA Jam or something, or Gauntlet, and there'd be just me and the guy playing or whatever. But you'd look over at Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter, and there'd be 15 people standing around watching these guys play, and I mean, it was huge back then. You know, so I guess it's kind of cool that they're reintroducing this maybe to a new audience. Maybe a lot of them are the same people that played it back then, but it seems to me that maybe they're going to be drawing in a lot of younger people that never played these back in the day. So it could be good for gaming in general, just to get more people, you know, on board and playing games. And I definitely like the Pro Tour idea, just to make gaming competitive and make it kind of a big deal. So I think it's kind of cool. I hope it turns into something big. I probably won't ever watch one of these, but you know, if they ever make a Skyrim competitive game, I'll check that out. Me against NPCs, look out. But
that'd be totally epic.
Yeah, I'd watch that. I guess that's what your live streams are every week, though, Shank. Just like, yeah. You run away from them. But yeah, no, I think it's cool, and I hope it turns into something pretty exciting. So we'll have to see.
You know, there's nothing wrong with something like this. There's only good things that can come from this. I mean, it's a genre that nowadays seems to get love from game developers, but at the same time seems to be sort of puttering off into its own little niche.
Yeah.
And it needs this sort of revitalization to keep the genre going. This can only be a good thing. We actually have Supa in the chat who's telling me that, you know, Evo, talking about it, had some of the streaming has been getting 50,000 plus viewers. I mean, this is one of those things that this niche, while yes, it may not be the most vocal, it does have a diehard group who's willing to watch it. And it's the sort that I know would breed a lot of people to come watch it that would love to watch this sort of thing. Actually, I used to work at a game store back in the day when I was going to college, and had one of the people, a regular, who came into the store, actually would buy any old broken Xbox 360 controllers, any that had messed up on the outside, because he'd rip the casing off of them and make the 360 controller. He would rewire it into a big box that he made the arcade style controls on top of, and he was a engineer, and he would be able to wire them up perfect. He'd come in and bring in a few and have tournaments in the store where he would just set up a few of these arcade box controllers and play. That was so cool just to watch. And man, I know that I honestly will probably be watching this, just having it in the background. Me personally, I suck at these games, but I'm willing to watch them.
Cool. Yeah, I've watched, you know, a few other kinds of turn. I've watched some StarCraft tournaments. Those are pretty fun, and I can't play StarCraft worth crap, but they're fun to watch. And you know, the announcers or whatever that they have that are, you know, broadcasting, make it pretty exciting, more than you would think it would be. So it might be worth checking out. Definitely, it's more exciting than you would think it would be if you've never watched a competitive tournament like this. So who knows?
Absolutely. All right. Is there anything else we want to say on this? No? Nothing?
I'm good, man. I mean, my lack of knowledge on fighting games in general is, like, pitiable at best.
Yeah?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it takes a surprising amount of skill to do it right.
Oh, yeah.
It's one thing that I will never be able to do, but I definitely have respect for the people who can master those sorts of games.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Moving on. Brian, please tell us why Titanfall will suck.
Well, for that, go read my article on Quest Gaming Network. But there was some more news that came out, I think it was this morning, about Titanfall and the resolution.
But it's going to be revolutionary.
Yes, it is. And it's next gen.
Hold on. I'm a proponent of this game, and even I disagree that it's revolutionary, but continue.
Yes.
Oh, Lord.
So anyway, just to jump right to the point, the Respawn's lead engineer, which Respawn is the company making the game, Richard Baker, held an interview with Digital Foundry. And we got this article that we pulled up today from Eurogamer.net. And basically, he said that the resolution on Titanfall at launch is going to be 792p, which I didn't realize that was a thing until they said it, rather than 900p that they were targeting.
792, 793, whatever gets the job done, right?
Right. I can't wait till they start making them 1081p. That's going to be awesome.
How the hell is that even possible?
It's not.
So anyway, I pulled out a couple quotes from the article that I thought might be worth talking about a little bit here. So this is Respawn's lead engineer, Richard Baker. He says, "We've been experimenting with making it higher and lower resolutions. One of the big tricks is how much ES RAM we're going to use. So we're thinking of not using hardware MSAA and instead using FXAA to make it so we don't have to have this larger render target. We'll have Shanks' translation here in a little bit, because even I don't know what he means. We're going to experiment. The target is either 1080p non-anti-aliased or 900p with FXAA. We're trying to optimize. We don't want to give up anything for higher res. So far, we're not 100% happy with any of the options. We're still working on it. For day one, it's not going to change. We're still looking at it for post-day one. We're likely to increase resolution after we ship. So, you know, it's unfortunate that they can't pump it out in 1080p and make it, you know, as beautiful as possible. But, yeah, I'm kind of wondering here. I mean, I think I know the answer, and I know what Shank would say for sure, but I'm wondering who's to blame here. Is it Respawn? Are they not doing their job and figuring out how to program for the Xbox One, or is it the Xbox One that is limiting developers and not enabling them to make games at maximum resolution? So I thought maybe we could talk about that a little bit after Shank maybe tells us what the hell that quote just meant.
Yeah, actually, I'll go reverse. I want to talk about, because you raised a good question that I didn't think of, but I mean, okay, the entire point of these consoles, whatever you develop on, especially consoles, because they're highly, highly specialized, you know, their primary thing is for games. It's not like a PC where a PC can play games, but guess what? It still needs to be a fully functional PC if you want to do like video editing, movies, rendering, you know, graphic rendering, all this other, like, it needs to do a jack of all trades kind of thing. Consoles are highly specialized. And that's one of the best parts about a console is that it's a static piece of hardware that you know what you're coding for. Now, that being said, and coming from some, just purely from that kind of standpoint, when you're creating this a box, okay, not necessarily Xbox, or just when you're creating such a console, your job as the architect and also the engineer of that machine is to make it so that you have the developer, when they come to create content for your console, has virtually, like, you remove the obstacles, because you want development to be as seamless and as easy as possible. Because guess what? You make development easy for the developers, they spend a lot less time trying to figure out your machine and more time working on the game, which also translates to more games being made in the same amount of time. That equates to more revenue and more gamers. So, I mean, it's kind of like a cycle that you want to make your box as easy to develop on as possible. And before I get into the explanation of this, I'm going to ask Dave for his opinion on Brian's question too.
As for if it's being held back because of the developer or the system?
Yeah, because I think this, I don't think this is Respawn's fault at all, honestly. I mean,
of course it is.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, of course it is. There's two things happening here. It's, first off, it's both their faults. Number one, the system is what it is. If they set the bar low, that's where the bar's set. I mean, they're idiots for setting it so low, but that's where it's set. If you're building the game, it's up to you to figure out what you can and cannot do to make your game look as good as possible without being so overpowered that it can't run reasonably to meet today's standards. So, yes, it is both their damn faults.
Well, I might say, you know, maybe they are doing that. Maybe Respawn has done all they can to make it look as good as possible.
Then they shouldn't
and
have put
not
it on the Xbox One.
Well, you sure. Get, I mean, they had their reasons, though, because if you go back and look at when they were creating the game and stuff, when they were, I mean, startup company, and they were looking at their strengths. One of the things is that Microsoft came to them with this hosting solution, which takes a lot of cost out of the equation, especially for a startup company to host all your own back end. So, I mean, that kind of goes with it. The fact that it's like, hey, I mean, we will literally get rid of one of your IT headaches for you and let you focus on creating the game. So that's one of the reasons that they kind of went to Microsoft. And, like, I mean, I used to work in tech, so, like, this is kind of – I'm sure Dave knows this. He has probably a little more experience on this. But, I mean, every game that launches that's a multiplayer, it's as much as a, like, exercise in development as it is in, like, an IT exercise as well. So, I mean, if you're a startup company and somebody says, we'll take care of your back end for you, okay. I mean, Dave, you do make a good point. Like, if you're developing to, I mean, they're developing on two consoles, right? Or two machines, because they have a the 360 version is being outsourced to a different development studio. So I mean, you do make a good point. If you're going to develop, then, you know, you should know what you're developing for. Yeah, no, I kind of agree with that. I guess I didn't really see that, but man, I don't know. Like, so it's kind of weird because if we look at, and actually, you know what? I'm going to use my fancy little XSplit switcher thing. Check this out, you guys. Hell yeah. So if we're looking at this quote here, to try and explain to you what this means and what this, what's his name? Baker. Richard Baker, yes. What Richard Baker was one of the lead engineers so you've heard me say that the PS4 and the Xbox One are slightly different with their memory, and the fact that the PS4 uses DDR5, which is a high-end graphics card, or pretty much all graphics cards at this point, and Xbox uses DDR3, which is basically used in regular PC system RAM. And in order to make up for the bandwidth, they're using what's called an ESRAM, which is a buffer, which is I'm going to highlight right here. And the ESRAM that the, Microsoft has chosen is 32 megabytes. Now, what they're saying here is one of the big tricks is how much ESRAM we're going to use. So we're thinking about not using hardware MSAA and instead using FXAA. So first of all, MSAA and FXAA are both what are called anti-aliasing solutions. FXAA is a post-process solution. So this effect is put on the game, put on the image rather than the individual geometry such as MSAA. And in general, actually not in general, it just is a fact that MSAA is a lot more demanding, especially recently with deferred shading, than FXAA. The cost of FXAA from a resource standpoint is tiny. So when they're saying we're thinking of not using hardware MSAA, that's huge, because what that's going to do is that's going to free up a lot of GPU cost off of the Xbox One GPU. And they're doing this because, A, MSAA is called multi-sampling anti-aliasing. And at a very, very high level, what this does is it basically takes multiple samples of the of your scene, basically, and whatever is going on, and then takes an average of those pixels. And then, you know, that's how it sort of gets rid of the aliased artifacts. And in order to do that, you need a lot of memory. You need specifically fast memory, bandwidth-wise. And the ESRAM is simply not large enough to do this. If it had been DDR5, okay, that's not a big deal. Or if the ESRAM had been 64 or 128 megabytes, also not a big deal. Now, what that means here is that we're going to experiment. The target is either 1080p non-anti-aliased or 900p with FXAA. So that means they can render the game. They're going to try to render the game at full 1080p, but with no anti-aliasing, meaning you're going to see jaggies everywhere. Or they're going to render the game at 900p with the FXAA, which is the another anti-aliasing solution. It's not as good, but it's also much, much cheaper resource-wise. So that's basically what's going on here when they're talking about ESRAM and the anti-aliasing solutions. Honestly, this is a conversation that should not have happened in the first place. On to Dave's point on both sides, on Microsoft side and Respawn side, because Dave, I mean, you do make good points there, but I don't really know. I genuinely don't know what the optimal solution here is. I mean, personally, I would rather go with the full resolution, because I mean, when you say 900p versus 1080p, despite what everybody tells you, it's not 180 pixels. All right, it's actually 634,000 fewer pixels, you know, from a surface area of the screen. It's not 180. Okay, it's like 634 or 644,000. I can't remember the math properly, but it's a lot of pixels. Okay, that you are missing from the image. So because of that, I would much rather take the route of I will give up my anti-aliasing for the full resolution 1080p. And here's what you guys would say.
I'd say I would ask my tech friend Shank if that's a good thing or not. Because I don't know, but it sounds good to me, sure.
I mean, it's a trade-off of, like, what do you want? Do you want effects or do you want full resolution? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
there's
right.
so much more that goes into gaming.
There is. I mean,
that you cannot just say that.
No, you. I mean, and honestly, you're right. I mean, the reason I'm saying it is I'm trying to, like, get a sort of a simplified, generalized conversation. But, dude, I mean, honestly, like, you not only have your full resolution, but you have all your, like, your actual effects that go into it. Any of the crazy, like, what happens? Okay, fine, 1080p, but what happens if there's a crazy giant battle scene going on? Dude, okay, so then you have all the AI scripts for all the Titans and the minions, you know, hoarding at once, you know, certain choke point, plus all the particle effects that are going. I mean, there's just so much stuff that's going on underneath than just, you know, what you're seeing on the screen. So it's I don't know, man. I mean, I genuinely, this is something that I'm not 100% sure of, like, what to do for this. Except for buy it on the PC, but...
Yeah. In all honesty, I feel that this is... I mean, the hardware is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it may be low, but it sounds like to me that they're not willing to build the game for the hardware. They're building their game, yes, and it sounds like they're either trying to make a point in that the hardware sucks, or they're genuinely trying to, I don't know, destroy their own game in the fact that they're basically saying, yeah, you know, we can make it frickin' amazing, but we're not willing to sacrifice effects in our game. We're not willing to sacrifice, you know, rendering distance by a meter. We're not really willing to sacrifice, you know, there's so many things that they could cut the fat on.
In a game, stupid minions, they don't do anything anyway.
Yeah, in a game this small, and I don't care what you say, this game is small.
It's on, first of all, I mean, am I even on me? No, I'm not on me. Okay, it's on Source.
It's such an old engine. It's so small of a game, and they can't cut the fat to make it run at 1080p. First off, I get it. This hardware sucks. Congratulations, gold pin. That's not the issue here. The issue here is, yeah, the hardware sucks, but the development team seems to be right along with it.
That's a good point, because if they went back and they were going to say, you know, let's say Halo 4 never existed and they wanted to make Halo 4 on the Xbox One, I mean, they could use that same game and technology, and it would be 1080p, I'm sure, on the Xbox One, because it's an older game. It's got, you know, less going on, less, you know, insert technical word here. But with Titanfall, they're trying to do too much and make it too big. And like you said, maybe they're not willing to give up everything that they have in that game. And if they did, if they just took a step back, you know, maybe it could achieve everything they wanted to graphics-wise and not have this problem.
We have a question in the chat from Chimp Godfrey, I think. He says, what are the benefits of 1080p without anti-aliasing? Will the jaggies be harder to see? The answer is, generally, the higher resolution you go, the less you will notice the aliased artifacts. But the caveat to that is, depending on where you are sitting in relation to your screen and the screen size. Your screen size actually has a lot to do with how much or how little you notice certain things going on visually. Mm-hmm. But generally, like, for example, if you rendered this game in 4K, you probably wouldn't really see. I mean, you could probably get away with no anti-aliasing at a 4K, but you need a 4K resolution monitor, of course, and literally like four Titans. But so that's, I mean, it gets complicated if you keep going higher and higher like that. So, yeah, that's all I got, man.
You know, I've been playing a lot of games recently, trying to fill a gap between here and ESO. I know it's a terrible thing to say, but it's true. I've noticed that there's a lot of games on the market nowadays that are either really big or really small. And I feel that the game that they're presenting when it comes to Titanfall should be the really small. There's something they're not telling us about the game that they're not willing to sacrifice for. I'm willing to say that it sounds to me like they have architecture in the game to push it past the 6v6, or they're looking at including a single player or some other type of option that they're not willing to sacrifice the guts of the game for.
I honestly don't know if it's because, I mean, it's a beta, so take it with a grain of salt. But when I played it on both consoles or both machines for roughly equal-ish amount of time. And I don't know, man. I mean, when I was playing it, I just felt like, okay, like the PC was playing it perfectly fine with everything, with more actually on than the Xbox version. And the I think what they were trying to do is they were trying to push, you know, X amount of things into the game. Because the one thing that they want that they're not going to sacrifice is the 60 frames per second. I mean, they want the 60 frames per second. Which that's
what
okay.
What is that all about?
Dude, that's all the rage. That's all the shooters, arcade shooters you want 60 frames. I don't know. But
I mean,
that's
yeah,
that's
I get it. That's nice and all. But honestly, do you know how many MMOs I've played where I've brought down raid bosses at 14 frames a second?
Yeah. But I mean, that I think that's the difference, is because you've played them on your PC, right? Which can go whatever frame rate. But, and you got to think about it from, you know, like the purest console standpoint, is that you've been playing Call of Duty at 60 frames per second since 2006, 7-ish. And that has become, that 60 frames, because of that game, has become the bar for, if it's a shooter and it's multiplayer and online, it needs to hit this.
When I'm playing my MMOs, I'm either playing on my laptop, which is 17 inches, or I'm playing on my desktop. Guess what size my desktop monitor is?
No idea. 15. 24.
17 inches. They're tiny as hell, 17. Okay? If, you know, when I have a console, especially when I go over to my best friend's house, do you know how big the television he plays his consoles on?
Yeah, but how does TV size have anything to do with the frame rate?
I'm getting there. Do you know how big his TV is for 50, his consoles?
50, 55, 60.
Wall.
$1.
Oh. Wall projection?
No. Okay. It's a real TV, but it's like you walk into his house. It's like front door, wall, television, wall. Like it exists upon its own. All right? When you talk about what's the most important thing to take up, you know, the most important amount of your resources, I would first and foremost say that the higher pixelation is going to be the best thing you can possibly have when it comes to consoles.
Yes.
Because you're playing them on your big ass TV.
Yeah. You want a higher pixel count. I mean, and that's the thing, is that the difference between 720p and 1080p, all these people saying it doesn't matter. You get a big enough TV and you sit a certain, you can absolutely tell the difference between 720 and 1080.
Yeah, especially on the bigger screens. Yeah. So how effective is it to have 60 frames a second Minecraft? You know, basically, it's like, hey, look, I have 60 frames a second, but my gun is rendered as a single pixel.
But like, see, that's the other thing, though, because your pixel throughput, which is directly tied to resolution, is not a direct correlation between pixel throughput and frame rate. Because you could have, I mean, for example, like, no matter what resolution you're pushing out, you know, that rock still has the same number of polygons. There's still the same number of particle effects going on. It's just not at a different, it's just at a slightly different resolution, but the actual effects are the same in number and the actual assets on screen are the same in complexity. So you can't really tie your resolution directly to frame rate. I mean, could it help? Yeah, possibly. But to really achieve that 60 frames, it's not just the resolution you have to sacrifice. It's the resolution plus some of the other effects that are going on in the background.
Yeah, people only want to look at resolution and frame rate, but the guts of the game really account for it.
Oh, yeah.
The majority of what's going on there.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about it on previous episodes that, you know, it renders in a 3D situation, then puts it in a 2D model to place it onto your screen. That's just how engines render. That's why they call it rendering. I mean, there's a lot more to video games than just how fast it can put out an image and how big it can put out the image. But mm-hmm. in all honesty, those are the only two things that matter. So
to the consumer, yes.
To the consumer. And those are, the consumer is the person who's buying it. So those are the only two things that matter.
Yeah.
So in all honesty, that's what they should be shooting for. How big they can make it and how fast they can make it. And then the other stuff needs to just fall in line afterwards.
Yes. Yeah, honestly, if you need to literally like sacrifice ambient occlusion and some of your particle effects to achieve that resolution and frame rate, do it. Just do it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the gameplay isn't really, I mean, people playing it aren't really going to notice, oh, there's like, you know, 1,000 fewer particles over here. Like, there will be 3 people on Earth who will notice that. So, you know. Here we go. That's all we got, man. I think.
Yeah, I think we're good at this. I think this is going to be like the rant for the ages. Like, when we refer to anything, we're going to talk about, you know, hey, go back to episode 37. That's what we're talking about.
And actually, you know what? I'll say that for later. But yeah, keep going, dude.
So are we done with Titanfall now? Can we move on past the Titanfall?
We can absolutely move on.
Until next week when the servers crash tomorrow, nobody can play for 3 days. We'll be talking about that.
On Xbox. God,
Grand Theft Auto.
Yes, on Xbox.
I'm playing it on PC where hopefully there's fewer people playing.
Well, you can preload, so it should be
fine. I got it up, dude. I already got it up.
While preloading Microsoft, Jesus.
Bradford's in the chat saying 60 frames per second for my shooters. Enough said. Jesus.
But all Bradford right. has a PC, though. See,
I know. Let's get to the big news. The thing that everyone should be, like, crying and screaming over. The one thing that's going to revolutionize this, you know, next-gen consoles. The thing that we should really be giving a damn about. And that's, Shank, please tell us about DirectX 12.
Alrighty. So basically what happened was there was this post that was, dude, I really like being the maestro of this stream. This is cool. So there was this post from Anantech that was put out, and this was actually one of the more informative posts. But basically, DirectX 12, Microsoft put this out saying, join us at GDC. That's the Game Developers Conference. Join us at GDC on March 20th, 2014 at 10 a.m. I'm assuming that's Pacific because of Redmond is in Pacific time zone. And basically, they're going to be announcing DirectX 12 formally. And I'm going to have to back up here. So first of all, there's a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm going to try and condense this, but just bear with me, Dave and Brian and chat room. What is DirectX? Okay, first of all, DirectX is something called an API, which is an application programming interface. What it does is in the like lowest base level, you have, and I'm going to actually switch back so I can show you my hand motions. You have basically your hardware, which is here, and then you have your APIs, which kind of like sit like on the hardware, and then you have like your other crap, okay? So what it does is that it's basically a layer of tools, I guess, is literally like the best word I can think of. It's a set of tools that allow for applications to talk to the hardware. And DirectX is one such middleware sort of API. There's others like OpenGL, which is actually – there's really no difference between OpenGL and DirectX. And of course, with AMD, you have their new Mantle, which actually plays a huge, huge, huge point into what I'm about to talk about. So, of course, what does DirectX 12 even mean? Okay, it's like, okay, it's going to be announced. Does that mean, oh no, Shank, you just bought a really expensive graphics card like a week ago. Are you totally screwed? No, I am not screwed. Because what happens is this is the announcement. I highly, highly doubt DirectX 12 has even left the like headquarters of Microsoft, meaning that it's going to be 18 to 24 months before we really actually see some real DirectX 12 games that actually make genuine use of it. And not just for like sort of system optimizations that might be easier compared to DirectX 11, but like genuinely use some new out-of-the-box features that DirectX 12 allows for. So if you just bought a graphics card, if you're like me and you just bought a graphics card, or you're thinking about buying a graphics card in the next year, honestly, don't wait for DirectX 12. Just go ahead and buy whatever you were going to buy. You're really not going to see – you're not going to lose out, honestly, for the next year, really, really like year and a half, 2 years. Now, I had somebody in the chat room, okay, somebody – I think it was Chimp asking me what does DX12 mean for Xbox or something like that. I think it was him. I don't know. But anyway, this means absolutely nothing for the consoles because if you look at it, my guess is that DirectX 12 is going to be competing directly with Mantle. What is Mantle? Mantle is a low-level API, meaning it literally – it's a quote-unquote on-the-metal API, which allows for the developers to code directly to the hardware, as it were. And this is a lot – Mantle has a lot less overhead than DirectX 11, meaning it uses up less resources. Excuse me. So it's actually more efficient, and you can see this with Battlefield 4 where you got a frame rate performance like – a massive boost, DX11 versus Mantle. And Mantle is not coming to consoles, which is kind of a big deal because Mantle is an on-the-metal API. The consoles are already coded to be quote-unquote on-the-metal. So
they kind of don't need it.
Exactly. I mean, bringing Mantle to the consoles is kind of, honestly, it's redundant because the consoles are already coded that way in the first place. So what does DirectX 12 mean for the new consoles? It's quite honestly, Shank, being the enthusiast for the industry, and as I'm sure my fellow co-hosts and some of you out there listening are, we like to see, you know, our industry moving forward and like seeing new advancements, new innovations come out. So I'm personally happy for this. I mean, DirectX 12 is going to be great, but here's the really, really sad sort of flip side part. It's almost like a Promethean fire sort of circumstance here. DirectX 12, great, but this has sort of happened before. If we look at it from a going back into history, we had the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360 release a year apart, you know, 2007, and they were DirectX 9. Mm-hmm. Then, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but DX 12, or sorry, 10 came out in 2008, I think. And that was quickly replaced by DX 11, which was 2009, I believe.
Right. If I'm wrong. They actually are encapsulation processes over DX 9.
There you go. So you get.
Or they run simultaneously or something, some craziness.
Like, yeah, because you can put them in. You can put some games like in DX9 mode on your PC.
Right. You normally see DX9 installed and DX11 installed at the same time.
Yeah.
Because I think DX11 actually, like, it steals some of the processes that DX9 runs or something. Some craziness. I don't know. I'm. I just know that it's been a pain in the ass trying to explain that to people who think one of them has to be a bug. Like, no, dude, they both run at the same time.
Yeah, can I uninstall one? It's like, no, you kind of can't. So, the point is that you had the DX9, basically the last gen were all DirectX 9 consoles, okay? And 2009 happened, and then you had DirectX 11. So that was 3 years after 360 and 2 years after PS3. And since 2009, what has happened to the games? Cross-generation or cross-platform games honestly haven't gotten that much. They haven't made a huge leap forward across platforms in terms of technical sort of jumps here. You have a few standouts like Crysis and Battlefield, okay, fine, and Witcher, which was all DirectX 9, believe it or not. But it's crazy because you have the consoles and then they're immediately outdated, you know, a couple years later. But what happened was that you had 4 years basically between DirectX 11 and now, where a lot of PC ports, and I don't think it's unfair to say this, a lot of PC ports were just that. They were ports, and they were very poorly optimized. And you didn't really see – you basically saw, you know, like quad-core machines, which was the tech of the day, kind of not even really using all the resources. Again, it's a total waste. You have all the advancements in the silicon, but it's not really being used to the potential. Now what we have DirectX 11 on the PC. We have the OpenGL variant or equivalent, I should say, on the PlayStation 4. And we have DirectX 11.1 or 11.2 on the Xbox One with a new firmware update, I think, is coming in the near future. But what does that mean? It means that the PC on the consoles are finally on parity with the API. Okay, this is a good thing. Now what's going to happen is in a couple of years, when DirectX 12 actually becomes more viable and more used in the industry, and developers start saying, oh my God, this is actually like some seriously awesome stuff. Let's start making use of this. What's going to happen is that there's going to be another massive gap. There's going to be a gap between what were on the consoles, which was DX 11, and what's on the PC with DX 12. Now, this is bad because if we look back, we had an 8-year cycle where it was a lot, like half of that cycle, I would argue, was stagnation. Technologically, it was a lot of stagnation. We as an industry, not as a PC player, as an industry, we cannot afford to do another 8-year cycle, especially when we see this new API on the horizon. We cannot do that because this is going to stagnate again and everything's going to fall back because a high-end PC today trumps these consoles. What's going to happen in 2 years when DX12 comes out? This is different because last time the consoles were actually slightly more powerful than your average PC, like a PC back in 2006. Now, your average PC is more powerful than a console. So there's a gap. DX12, that gap's going to get bigger. And I don't think this is a good thing in terms of long term. So my solution, which is not going to actually come to an actualization, is that they need to have new consoles soon after DirectX 12 actually starts getting mainstream. And we see a lot of titles using DX12. So I'm guessing 3-4 years. I want to see new consoles, DirectX 12 consoles.
Yeah, but aren't you excited for when Xbox releases its gaming console to replace the 360?
I mean, maybe, but I don't even know.
The Xbox people are like, damn you, Dean! Damn you for making fun of the Xbox One!
I think we scared away the Xbox people a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
And see, here's the thing. We got somebody saying how I feel about DirectX 12. Few games really use DirectX 11. And you're right, until this year, few games use DirectX 11 because the consoles didn't use DirectX 11.
Right.
The consoles did not have DirectX 11. They had DirectX 9. So even games that were also on the PC suffered. They had to stick with DirectX 9. DirectX 9, constraints.
Why would you, as a developer, develop a game under DirectX 9 for the consoles, knowing that your game's going to sell there, and then rebuild your game with DirectX 12? You'd have to change pretty much everything.
Yeah, because there's going to be new tools. I mean, if what everybody is predicting is true, that DirectX 12 is a quote unquote on the metal API,
above and beyond. You're going to be like, basically what this is saying is instead of running an application on your operating system, it's skipping some of the operating system to be able to go straight to running it on your hardware.
Yes, which is, I mean that's that huge performance right there.
Pulling off that much overhead, that's the whole point of consoles.
Exactly.
Is that they have so little overhead because they're not running the full operating system that does all the other crap that slows down your computer. The point of consoles is that they're light, that they don't have to have all that extra crap. But if you're putting on something like this, it's basically able to skip the operating system's, you know, bloatware, basically. Mm-hmm. then you're basically saying we're outdoing consoles at their purpose. This could be frightening if it weren't for, you know, Mantle and different things like that. You know, consoles having their own version of Mantle is what I mean, where they have their own way of doing that. This is going to take out the one good argument that consoles have left. And Shank's right. Consoles need to step up their game to compete. And I'm not saying that they're bad or anything. I'm saying that, you know, computers continually evolve. Consoles are soldered together.
Which is a strength and a disadvantage at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, honestly, but that's, I'm not saying that, like, we need new consoles right now. Let these play out for the next couple years. But very seriously, when we start seeing a lot of games starting to come out on DirectX 12, like, a lot of, like, mainstream, like, AAA titles and stuff like that on DX12, we really, I mean, we cannot just sit there with, you know, on old tech and say, hey, we did it last generation, we can do it this gen. No, we can't do that. We can't do that.
The chat room, Fran Truck says, I wish they had some sort of console upgrades instead. And I have one thing to say about that.
N64 RAM upgrade.
The Nintendo 64's RAM upgrade.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
Called it.
Wow.
Come on, that's like the greatest thing ever. Like, what? I can't play Donkey Kong 64? Let me put in my RAM upgrade.
Bam. You know what, though? I'm not against that idea. I'm really not.
No, I would love that.
Yeah, because these consoles now more than ever are so close to what the PC is, like, at a guts level. So, it's, I mean, think about it. The developers are already making a scalable game to run on, you know, low-end to high-end PCs. What's the difference if, you know, your Xbox, you can slap some, like, higher speed RAM in there? It's just like having a PC with more, like, higher speed RAM. You know? Like, what's... I think that's totally viable.
You know, if consoles came out with a
moddable console?
Moddable console that you could piece together like a bunch of Legos, you know, to make the perfect console. They could keep selling you the newest Lego piece that puts in, you know, this brings in a higher level of RAM. This one brings in a higher level of whatever. If they had a way, man, this entire industry would change.
It would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be growing pains, but I think it'd be worth it for everybody. Yeah. Like, not the consumer, but for, like, the suits.
Yeah. I mean, it would take some doing, but man, you would see consoles win on that. Bam. Done.
Yeah, you really would.
Just from ease of use. Anyway, any last things we want to say on DX11? Brian, we haven't heard much from you. I'm going to give you a chance.
No, I think you guys said it all. I don't know enough about it to really have anything smart to say. So I will again defer to you guys. But I mean, it sounds great. I can't wait till it starts to be mainstream. And yeah,
Brian, just imagine Elder Scrolls 6 DX12.
Okay, yeah, that sounds pretty good. I'm getting a little excited over here now. Oh yeah,
Dave isn't really reacting, but I know back. Visibly he's, you know,
well. They're kind of shooting on a 20% win streak at the moment, so
20%
out of the five Elder Scrolls games, there's only one good one, so can't really put all those eggs in one basket, sorry.
But how about the music, Dave? You love that, right?
What
any in-game music.
Dave's got racks and racks of 8-track tapes of Elder Scrolls music.
Those who don't know, I spend money that I have on buying copies of Oblivion.
So that
I feel that it's a service to the world to take them out of circulation.
I mean, it's either he buys it and destroys it, or I just keep buying them and playing the same thing.
And just so you know, about music, Dave likes to buy, I think as I understand this correctly, Dave, you like to buy every video game soundtrack you can possibly find, turn it on in your stereo, and turn the volume all the way down. That's how you listen to it, right? Yeah.
I actually listen to game music outside of the game. Like, I'll collect the OSTs and just have them and listen to them, but I will not play the game and listen to them. Like, I have just off the top of my head, you know, as we've talked about before, Silent Hill 3, love that album. I have the Persona 3 album that I have and play. I'm kind of mad. It's actually went and bought Bravely Default. I tried to get the collector's edition just because it had the album in it, and they didn't have any left, and I was really sad about it.
So
that may be something I'll ask for my birthday, just to get a second copy of Bravely Default just for
the soundtrack. All right.
God, anyway. all right, so I think we're done with the news for today. Brian, I know we said that we'd kick you off the show now so you could go rest.
Yeah. It's time for me to get up on out of here, I think.
All right. Well, Zombie Science. Brian, it was good having you.
That's good. Really good to be back. I've missed you guys. It's been too long.
Yeah, we appreciate having you. That's we miss you, Zombie Brian.
Well, I believe I will be fully resurrected next week, so I look forward to a full show.
Well, that's good to hear. You'll be more than welcome back. People in the chat room, please feel free to wish Silent Fury 007 himself, Mr. Brian Armstrong, quick recovery so that he can be back next week. We'll miss you, brother.
All right. Thanks, guys. Everybody have a good night. Take care.
All right. Now, Shank, I have a very important question to ask you. Shank, you there?
Whoops, chat room could hear me, but you couldn't. I was on mute.
I have a very important question to ask you.
Oh, yeah.
Let's say, hypothetically, that I am completely blind.
Uh-huh.
And play video... That doesn't work. Okay, let's say that I have astigmatism.
Okay.
And I would like to listen to shows or books. Yeah, books. Because, damn it, I'm terrible with these segments.
So, please. Audible.com. Audible.com, you can download your free book at audibletrial.com/questgamingnetwork, and you will receive a special 30-day free trial. Since, you know, we're kind of a born and bred Elder Scrolls fan network here, and we know many of our fans are huge Elder Scrolls fans, so if you are such a person, you will absolutely love The Infernal City, an Elder Scrolls novel, book 1 of 2 by Greg Keyes. And, once you finish that, why not give Lord of Souls, Elder Scrolls, this is book 2 of 2 by Greg Keyes. You can listen to both of those as part of your special 30-day free trial. These novels take place 40 years after the Oblivion Crisis. So, if you guys want to support us and listen to some awesome audiobooks that takes place in the Elder Scrolls universe, head on over to audibletrial.com/questgamingnetwork.
All right. And to take the place of Zombie Brian, we have brought the Grand Khan himself in to replace him. Everyone, please welcome Grand Khan Joseph Bradford.
How's it going, guys?
Ah! Fangirls scream, throw panties at the wherever they are. Podcast.
Okay. I'm not quite sure that's the reaction that I normally get. Normally it's like angered stares, but okay.
Oh, okay. So I should put down my boxer briefs.
Angered scares and Benny Hill music.
So welcome, Joseph Bradford. We actually brought you on today to talk a little bit about are one of the worst games I have ever seen in my life. In the best way possible.
Good. I was going to say it's so good.
It is so good. It is offensively wonderful. Okay? Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, we're talking about South Park, The Stick of Truth. God, I wish we had some, you know, something. Hey, we totally did it, you guys. You know, something.
We literally owe the name of the show of this podcast to South Park.
Yeah, yeah, it was funny. It was you know, every single time I did a quest with Cartman, that every single time the quest was done, that's the line I thought. We did it, you guys. We totally hear us.
That's beautiful. This game is so offensive, though. I was actually on the podcast when you first started it, Bradford, and I remember.
Yeah, it was actually after this show last week.
It was, and oh my god, it was.
It has just gone downhill from there, man.
It hasn't. Okay, first mistake Bradford made was he let the chat room dress him.
I did?
Sort of.
You're right, I did. Okay,
people in the chat room were yelling out.
My Titanfall t-shirt. They didn't pick this out.
No, not the Titanfall t-shirt. You know, we all make mistakes, but not that one. Oh, I'm talking about the character in South Park, Stick of Truth.
Yes, my Guido Goth Jew.
Guido Goth Jew, and that actually became a hashtag for about an hour there. That was beautiful.
It's gotten worse. I think last time I played the game, I was a Guido Goth Jew who had to dress up like a girl to sneak into the abortion clinic.
Oh my God.
I had glitter, you know, on my face. I had a ton of, like, you know, crazy hair going on. I had a wig on and stuff, and I was wearing a surgeon's outfit. So we'll just let your mind wander for a second and see where that's taking you.
Princess Zucchini.
Princess Zucchini, yes. Yes, she's there too.
Is it a she?
He/she. I have a quest to get her, give her a flower, but I haven't done it yet because I'm really afraid of what would happen.
It's in Koopa
I
Keep, man. It's like right there when you first see her. It's like literally the first.
Yeah, see, I didn't get the quest from her in Koopa Keep. I got the quest for her when I was talking to the elves. So.
Oh, see, dude. Okay, I picked up the flower and randomly talked to Kenny, and it told me I had completed the quest.
Nice.
It was totally like Skyrim, like when you just do stuff and it happens.
So but, South Park, Stick of Truth. Now this game,
keep in mind, you know, PG,
yeah,
do it's your best.
There's a reason why I have not streamed it since that night,
because
that beginning part of the game is probably about the most PG thing in the entire game. I mean, there was portions where I'm on a spaceship, you can let your mind wander what happened there. Mentioned the Unplanned Parenthood place. It just goes downhill from there, and every single thing, you know, just I'm roaring in laughter as I'm checking over my shoulder to make sure my daughter's not in the room, because it would scar her for life, every scene in this game. But oh my gosh, what a shock, by the way. The chat room saying you're always picking flowers no matter what game it is. But the cool thing is it feels like I'm watching the show. I'm just interacting with the show. And if you guys haven't played any other South Park games before this, this is the first South Park game that Matt and Trey, have had an actual hand in making. They were involved in the other ones, of course, but they kind of licensed the game out. This is one where they were intimately involved with the entire development process. I mean, they were writing the show. They were writing the game. You see, I even called it a show because that's what it feels like. They're writing the game. They did all the voice acting for the game, and it definitely shows. And so I think any other South Park game without Trey and Matt would be a horrible, horrible waste. Any South Park game from now on that comes out after this has to have them involved because they set the bar so high. Yeah. And aside from the overall fact that it's South Park and you're getting to finally explore this place and poke your head into basically every house that has a doorknob. The game itself, the systems in the game are actually really good. It's a turn-based RPG, but it's in the Paper Mario, Super Mario RPG vein where it's not, you know, okay, I select this skill and my guy does it, or I select this you know, enemy selects his skill and does it to me. I have to, you know, press A to block. There are some skills where you have to, like, press a certain button at a certain time. You have your magic abilities, which is basically just, you know, farting.
And but it's they even awesome.
Come out. Yeah, they even come out and call one of them your dragon shout, and your reference to the dragonborn throughout the game.
Oh my god,
it's awesome, dude! No, there's so many like references to other games. It's ridiculous.
Oh yeah, yeah. And so you have that stuff as well, because if you don't time that right, like for instance, your dragon shout, you know, will give out the gross out effect. It also stuns your enemy. But if you don't time that shout right, you know, basically when you release the gas, it only damages them. It doesn't damage that much. So you do have to be very mindful while you're in combat. I think that speaks very well to this game. It's not just one of those simple turn-based, you know, Super Nintendo, early PlayStation, you know, JRPGs.
You know, doesn't that speak for South Park, though? For as offensive as it is, it's also that good of a game.
Yeah.
In its own right. Like, if you take away all of the offensive stuff, it's still a damn good game.
And I think I tweeted this out earlier. I don't even know if I texted it to you, Bradford, but this is the only turn-based game that I don't utterly hate. This is like, because I hate turn-based combat like you don't even know. Like, hate it. But the way that they implement it in this game is so good and so fluid that it doesn't feel as turn-based as it is, because there's a lot more going on, I guess, you know, underneath the combat system and everything. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, when I played it, I actually liked the combat. It's fittingly South Park.
So we have some people in the chat, you know, asking about whether or not it's on next gen. No, it's only on PS3, Xbox 360, and PC. I've only played the PC version. My review will be the PC version.
Wait, next gen's out?
Anyways. I know that there are technical issues, especially with the Xbox 360 version, with a ton of stuttering. I haven't noticed it too much on the PC, but I will say there are portions where my character is kind of, you know, jumping in and out. You know, the frame will shift back to where my character is, and he won't be there for a split second. So there are some technical issues with the game. But for the most part, I have not had a single issue playing, other than just making sure nobody else is in the room with me. Because there are some portions in the game I would just feel so embarrassed if anyone was watching me play.
I love that. I love watching Bradford be embarrassed about playing a game and enjoying it.
Oh, man. There is a scene where you get... This is basically, you know, okay, there's a portion of the game where you have to fight off some people stealing underwear. And where the boss fight takes place, I won't say what happens, how you get there, what's going on. But if you're at that portion of the game where the boss fight takes place, oh my gosh. I couldn't concentrate. I had to go through the fight twice because I was just laughing so hard and couldn't believe that that's what happened there. I'm being utterly vague because I do not want any spoilers. Because one thing I've noticed is this game may not have a whole lot of replayability. Simply due to the fact that there's not a huge difference between the classes. You know, I can pick up any weapon, I can wear any armor, so there's really no purpose for me to go back through the game and play as another class. So I don't want to spoil anything for anybody. I'm talking very vague, and when I write my review, it'll be the same, because I also have to maintain the lack of offensiveness on the site. I'm going to be doing a video review as well, and it's not going to have a whole lot of stuff. Yes, underwear gnomes.
It'll literally be like the credit scene,
and there'll like be one little tiny thing of me walking around the a battle sequence, and that's it.
I'll send you a file of a censor sound.
I may need censor bar artwork and stuff.
I'll see what I can send you.
That being said, guys, it's definitely, if you love South Park, get the game, because again, it feels like you're just watching an episode of the show. If you don't like South Park, definitely don't buy it. If South Park the show offends you, this is much worse than the show in many respects.
this is what this is, I think, is a concentrated version of 14 years of South Park into about 10 or 12 hours of gameplay. So, I mean, man, like, there are so many subtle nods. Like, unless you have been watching the show, like, since day one, and you're just intimately, like, you will just not get it, because there's, or it'll kind of just go over you a little bit. Like, there's very subtle nods that they have, and, like, even hidden things that you gotta find.
You mean how your first friend is Eric's mom?
Well, actually, my first friend was Butters.
Yeah, mine was too.
Okay, no one's really Butters' friend. Your first friend is Eric's mom.
Go into Eric's mom's room. It gets
go into his mom's room.
I just find it funny because, like, she's everyone's first friend.
That's true. It's very true.
So, dirty. Bradford, can I just say Steam family sharing for the win?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is pretty cool. So Shank has been able to play it because we've set up Steam family sharing. So you're welcome, Shank. And I have to give a shout out to one of our fans, because I wouldn't be playing it if it wasn't for the fan, you know, hooking me up. So Kurisu Mori. Yes. Thank you very much, man. I really appreciate that. The show is about 17 years old, guys, in the chat room. I think one of my favorite parts in this game, though, actually was... I just had it, too. Okay, so the game makes me remember and harken back to when I was in fourth grade and playing stuff like this, because no matter what's going on with the storyline, the game for the Stick of Truth continues to go on. And it's like... how dense and how stupid are these people? But then it's like, wow.
They're 9-year-old kids.
I didn't really. Oh, well, yeah, but the people around them, like, you know, anytime.
Oh, like the adults. Okay.
Yeah. Anytime Randy comes on the scene, man, it's just like, really?
Well, dude, it's Randy, really? Man.
And Canada, oh my gosh.
I have not yet gone to Canada.
Okay. Canada will make you laugh so hard. The subtle dig they take at Canada in this game. My gosh, man. My goodness. It's hilarious. There's a line that keeps happening in Canada. Have you ever heard of dire wolves? They're like wolves, but only dire. or there's a status effect you can only get in Canada. It's called dire AIDS.
Oh, my God.
And there are...
Oh, my God. Hang on. I can't even hear. It's just...
Your cure potions don't take out dire AIDS. You have dire AIDS until you go to the health clinic and get your dire AIDS cleared up. But then you still have regular AIDS. So it's like, you know, you have like magic Johnson AIDS after that point.
So you need money?
Yes.
Oh my God.
No matter how much money you have in the game, once you go to Canada, you're broke because they only take Canadian dollars.
Dude, that sucks. My net worth is like $150 now.
Yeah, I had like $176 because I was hoarding everything and just selling it. And I tried to buy something in Canada, and I was like, wait a second. It says I don't – it's the thing I'm trying to buy. It's the Claymore of Canada, and it's just a hockey stick. And I'm like, I have enough money to buy this hockey stick. What's going on? And I look, and it says Canadian dollars. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. So I had to go to the bank and exchange my money for Canadian dollars.
Chimpokomon.
Yes.
Yeah, talk to us about Chimpokomon. Did you find Shu?
I have yet to find Shu.
Dude, oh. I've been on a quest to find Shu this like entire time, and I can't find Shu.
He's the only Chimpokomon that matters. He's like the Pikachu of Chimpokomon.
Currently, Sakumai is Canadian. I'm sorry. I wasn't making fun of Canadians. Just, it's funny. Oh, man. The funny things is when you go to Canada, I don't want to spoil anything. Just go play the game. Just go play the game. It is great.
Can you at least tell me if Princess Kenny gets any more anime scenes?
Oh, dear God.
I cannot. I have yet to beat the game, so I don't know yet. Though one of Butters' ultimate attacks as he turns into Professor Chaos, which is the anime version of Butters. It's really great.
All right. God. Well, looks like Bradford, you're getting called away.
Well, actually, I want Bradford here for the Quatua if we can keep you.
Yes.
Yeah, no, you can. Just talk amongst yourselves real quick. I got to go find my daughter.
All right. Well, while we're talking amongst ourselves, I think it's time to move into the Quatua. So, Shank, if you would, as slowly as possible, please read through the Quatua for this week.
I totally will. Actually, you know what? If Bradford's gone for a second, you want to do some, you want to tweak out with some audio?
You want to vamp?
We could vamp. Like, maybe do so. Oh, wait, hey, he's back. That was a great vamping session, you guys.
Oh, okay. Is he back?
I'm back.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and by the way, I'm getting Titanfall on Xbox One, so nah.
That's
I heard you guys talk about that.
I'm sorry.
Dude, that's okay. I mean,
we're all making mistakes.
Yeah.
All right. Shank, yes. If you would, tell us about the Quatua.
All right. This one, I think, is actually, it's kind of appropriate. Like, more so to this show. This is going to be a little bit less constricting to some of our listeners and viewers out there because it is a little bit more specific. But basically, if you don't know, Totally Heroes was created as and to this day remains a writer's show. Bradford, who is here right now, actually conceptualized a show about a year ago where the hosts of the show would be the writers for the Quest Gaming Network. And what we'd be doing is bringing you news from around the industry and kind of providing our own insight in our opinions on what is going on, as well as, you know, games that we're playing and stuff like that. It's just basically a giant conversation with gamers. And, you know, along with providing you hopefully some intelligent and educational podcasts each week, we're also, as writers and kind of like the written voice of the network, I should say, we're kind of responsible for bringing forth a certain command of prose when it comes time for reviews, such as, you know, South Park and some other news items and other reviews that we have written and will be writing in the future. So this question, I think, is very, very appropriate, and it's directed at not just my fellow hosts, but also any of you writers out there. If you're, you know, a professional, if you're in the industry, if you're an aspiring to get into the industry, or if you're just sort of like an amateur freelance writer around for the games industry. So the question is, what do you find most difficult when critiquing a game? I'm going to ask my hosts first. Because it is actually, I think it's a pretty, I was thinking about this earlier today, it's actually kind of difficult.
No, it is not.
Okay.
I'm a jerk.
Well, we know that.
That's my problem, is not only am I a jerk, but I'm eloquent at times, especially when I can, I know how to express myself. I know how to put forward a point, especially when it's being brutally honest. And I've actually had to change a few sentences of previous articles.
Or like paragraphs.
Thank you. Bradford actually read off my first draft of one of my articles to one of his coworkers and then messaged me back and said his coworker was just like, that's terrible. Like, you have
it wasn't
to be
terrible. It was just like, wow, he's really angry.
And that's my thing is, I have to tone it down in both directions sometimes. When I really like something, I do come off as the fanboy. You know, I do come off as the white knight, even if I'm just trying to be honest. Mm-hmm. In the same way, if I am pointing out discrepancies, I can do so, and man, I seem to come off mean sometimes. I really don't mean to. I genuinely just want to try to expose a game for what it is, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's you know, at least my problem.
Shank, I'm interested to hear what yours is.
It's, man, it's really, especially since I'm writing reviews, it is absolutely no secret whatsoever that, like, my head, I'm, like, completely, when it comes to this industry, the one thing that I'm passionate about and is honestly what drew me to the industry, you know, in my adult life, is the technical and innovative side of things. Not necessarily the writing, even though I respect the writing and I respect the art direction and the music. I really care primarily about the technology side of the house. So for me, when I'm critiquing a game, it's really, really, really difficult to take off my the lenses of, you know, looking for stuff, because, like, I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing, but, like, I can, if I'm playing a game, like, I can literally pick out, like, oh man, like, that there's no, like, ambient occlusion on this, there's no really anti-aliasing on this, and to forget that I see that and try to put myself in the shoes of, like, an average sort of gamer who probably won't see those things from a purely technical sort of side of things, that for me is the most difficult part, because I am really, 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 like Dave said, like, I mean, he'll be brutally honest about that stuff. Like, I personally, I'm really, really brutally honest about the tech and the actual visual output of certain of games in general. So for me, it's incredibly difficult for me to try and dial it down when I'm critiquing a game, because not everybody sees it that way in the same vein that I do. But if that is really, really difficult, because, like, I try to tone it down, but I don't think it works, really. I mean, you have to ask Bradford, because he's the one that edits everything.
Yes.
Those Bradford sees all. Longest. Yeah, those are typically the longest portions of your reviews.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's it for me. I mean, it's really difficult for me not to view games as a technical exercise, because to me, games for me are, like majority, like, I would say, like, 90% of games for me are technical, and then the 10% is everything else: content, story, sure, gameplay, everything else. So,
well, and the thing that we as, you know, writers and I'll come out and say it, because none of us get paid for this. So, I mean, we can't really consider ourselves real journalists in the sense that, you know, we get paid. But we all have experience now. I mean, I've been writing game, you know, articles and game reviews for about 2 years now. Shank, a little over a year and a half. Dave, I don't know how much writing you did before you started writing for us, but, I mean, you've been in the sphere of having to review games for podcasts and stuff for many years too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that we struggle with is taking out what we, you know, what is most important to us as the game. You know, in this case of Shank, it's going to be your technical things. In the case for me, it's all about the story and the music. If it's got a great story and it's got great music, typically I'm going to like the game, whether or not the game looks the prettiest or handles the best. But I have to take my, you know, preconceived notions of what makes a great game and put them to the side to think about, okay, what makes this great overall? Why is this a good game? And taking away my personal feelings and trying to be as objective as possible, that's never going to happen. We're all going to interject some sort of objectivity into our reviews.
Subjectivity.
Well, okay, yeah, thank you. Because in the end, when you really get down to the nitty-gritty, a review is an opinion piece.
Yeah.
We can be as transparent as possible, but in the end, my opinion of this game is this. That's what a review sums up to be. Mm-hmm. And that's why you have such varying reviews. I mean, we saw with Thief, we saw a ton of negative reviews, but just judging from what Shank has said, his review is not going to be overly negative. Because everyone has different opinions. And my biggest issue is trying to remember that at the same time, I'm trying to be objective and try to present the game in every single facet. But my heart is, thanks, Tempest, having worked in a newspaper, being paid is not a requirement for journalism. I feel better now. my hardest part is taking away my preconceived notion of what makes games for me great and try to put myself in the shoes of what makes games great overall.
That's one reason why I'm really happy that we got the rating scale that we do.
Yeah.
And it's working.
It standardizes things a bit.
Yeah, but one thing that I made sure to include in that scale is, even though we have the 9 points that can be broken apart into three different sections, the way we rate things, we still have at the very bottom is the opinion of the writer, because at the end of the day, there's no way. In fact, that was one of the things when I was in high school. I was actually the editor of my school newspaper as well, and editor on my yearbook. And one of the biggest things that we learned when I was in journalism is there's no way to be completely, you know, unobjective in the way you write. There's no way to write without writing from who you are.
Yeah, you mean complete objectivity, not right. Right. You mean removing the subjectivity of
right. There,
whatever you're writing.
There's no way you can separate yourself 100% over an extended article. There's no way to do that.
Yeah.
So the way we do it here, if you look at our articles, even if they are just straight fact pieces, fact-finding missions, you know, completely just straight copy and paste information, even those articles always have something in them that's a little bit of opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one, because honestly, it's going to have opinion in it anyway. Why not play into it? And we seem to have a pretty good staff. I mean, other than Shank, everyone here is sane and rational in the way that they play games.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually, yeah, I will totally accept that. I mean, here we go. We got Dave's Blackguards review. If we look, we've got...
Oh, God, don't show them that.
We've got different sections.
Dude, that was the review we're talking about.
That's the review we're talking about. Like, I was so brutal in that the first draft of that review that Bradford was like, okay, we really got to change some of this. Like, that whole first paragraph, take that out and redo it.
I think we ended up delaying it 4 or 5 days. Because it was originally supposed to go out on a...
Yeah, we delayed it a whole week, I think, on that one, didn't we?
In the end, the end score didn't change.
No.
But it was the language that changed. It wasn't as harsh. I mean, had you read that first draft... Oh my gosh, you would have like...
Lord. People would have yelled at me hard.
I personally like these screenshots. I feel like you put them in like specifically for me.
The problem is with that article, while I don't feel I was too light, I do feel that I drew back a little bit to put it in the necessary light. I know I can be harsh, and I know I express myself quite often in such a harsh tone, but when I see something, I talk about it. I'm not gonna hold back, and while that's a strength for me, it's also a weakness when you're trying to be reasonable in a review. And unfortunately for that review is what, our lowest scoring review with 2 out of 10. That's as reasonable of a review as I could put out on that game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right. We got a very,
so
very...
What's the chat room saying? I don't know if you guys talked about
the chat room. Yeah, the chat room, we actually had some... So the question was, what do you find most difficult in critiquing? The answer of the week goes to Maury, who sort of selflessly just says the ability to write.
Yeah, that's typically a good thing. Yeah.
We got XTNet saying good penmanship. Let's see, Osgand, consolidating my thoughts and ideas into a single project is very difficult. And that mm-hmm. is actually, I mean, you guys see editorials from us like every week. It's actually like we don't just sit there and do it like over, you know, 2 hours a night before. It takes us like a while to get our thoughts together, get a decent outline, and logically string together. I mean, it's not like a 2 hour thing. It's definitely an effort. We got, Tempera says, Oh no, Fishbang says you guys should do some kind of magazine. I would pay. All right.
That's an idea.
Supa actually just posted the hardest thing about writing for me is rejection.
See, and that to me is the easiest thing, because if you guys know me, if you guys have seen me around, you know, in all the streams, if you guys have been in any of the meetings with me, I could care less what y'all think. Whether you agree with me or not, your opinion
definitely true.
Matters not, because it's not going to change my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to agree, like, that's strangely, that's actually one of the easier things, because, I mean, first of all, okay, all three of us have been on shows, and it's no secret that on Elder Scrolls Off the Record, Dave and I disagree a lot.
Hell, we disagreed on Twitter today.
We disagreed on Twitter, and, like,
we disagree that Twitter is a thing or not? I mean, what was the disagreement about?
We're going to figure that out later.
Hi, little Bradford. But I mean, that's the thing. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm so used to, like, people just saying, like, no, you're wrong. Especially now that, like, I guess we're on a show and, like, stuff. So I don't know. It definitely, like, at least when I first started it, that was definitely kind of difficult, saying, hey, like, you know, that's not right. But I don't know. I guess you get used to it, honestly, if you just keep writing and writing and stick to your guns.
You know, that's the thing, is we have a lot of opinions here at QGN, and I don't think that if anyone on our staff who is willing to step forward and write an article, I don't think we would outright reject it. I mean, hell,
well, I have.
Look at the kind of stuff that I've written. Well, you've outright rejected articles?
I don't think I've rejected them, but I have made articles not fly. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but not without reason.
Yeah, yeah. It was never a, you know, this article's bad. This article's a, you know, this article's not going to work. It was more like, is there a different way to write it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, Bradford stopped me at the Blackguards review and said, hey, we need to do something about this, you know, this first paragraph in its entirety. Stop it. You know, basically. And he smacked me on the wrist and said,
I smacked him from across the internet, guys.
He did. And I cried for a little bit, but then I rewrote it and it was good.
And it worked.
But really, it's the way we do it here. We don't just stop people from expressing their opinion here. It's, you know, we're a bunch of volunteers. We don't have an agenda. We're trying to express our views about gaming in a calm, peaceful, rational manner. Well, except for Shank, who is just like flies off the handle.
If it's not DX11, it sucks.
No, dude, I will give you that. I have a ridiculously high standard for certain things, and if it's
and
not,
that's
met,
one then... reason why I like you writing reviews for us.
That's half your good parts right there.
Yeah, I mean, and I will just come out and say I have been, like I said, I've been doing this for about 2 years now. It'll be 2 years next month, and one of the things that I've enjoyed, especially recently, you know, is that I no longer have to feel as though I have to censor anybody. There are going to be times, you guys both know this, that I'm going to say, hey, we may need to reword that.
Mm-hmm.
Or
cool.
Why don't we cool off on that idea real quick, shelve it for a week or so and see what we can put up, you know, next week. But it's never a, hey, I don't think your opinion's not, you know, I don't think your opinion's not valid, therefore your article can't fly. And one of the things that you know, I'm trying to word this without offending anybody. One of the things we dealt with for a while was the fact that our opinions had to be kind of catered a certain way. And it made everyone upset because we weren't able to write what we want to write. And I'll just come out and say it. Since Yvarwin has taken the helm of everything, that has changed. I mean, you're seeing better articles because we no longer feel as though we have to censor ourselves in order to write them. And one of the reasons why your articles are so great, Shank, is because you have that high standard. One of the reasons why your articles are so great, Dave, is because you you are passionate about it. Whether you hate it or not, you're still passionate about it. Okay? One of the reasons why Brian's articles are so great is because they are so well thought out and so well written that his opinion is never in question. You know, he takes a side and he reflects that side. He also gives the other side credence, and his opinion is never left up for interpretation. You know what he's trying to get at the end of his piece. We've had some great people write some, you know, write some articles for us that aren't on the normal staff. Bangor has written a couple things. Supa has written a couple things.
Supa's, and Maury's written a couple things.
Yeah, Maury's written a couple things for us.
I love the stuff that we have from guest writers, man.
Yeah,
everybody on staff should write, man.
Well, and I'm looking at the chat room, and I'm probably gonna catch hell for this, but I'm just gonna come out and announce it, guys. If you write and you would like to submit a guest post, don't feel like you have to, you know, not submit something. We are more than happy to give our fans a place that if they want to submit a guest post to us and we think it'll work. Mm-hmm. We'll put it on the site. Send it to our email address that you'll hear later on in the community section. Yeah. But
and it doesn't necessarily have to be about like Elder Scrolls or something.
Yeah, I mean, the XTNet says it great. Your opinions are fairly shared. We all have opinions. Again, I'm blunt. If your opinion's different than mine, your opinion's still valid, but it's not going to change my opinion. Okay, but they're shared in a way that we don't ever condescend or put anybody down if they have an alternate opinion. And well except for Dave, until we rewrite it. And then once we rewrite it, then that's fine.
Let's just say that I didn't post that version, so it didn't exist.
It's somewhere in the ether. I think I have a screenshot of it somewhere.
God, tell me you don't. Tell me you don't. Jesus.
But I think we strayed away from the original question. What the question was, you know, what is the hardest thing? And that is, I think, collectively, the hardest thing. Are we offending somebody by our opinions? Because there's always going to be some.
I honestly don't care.
But it's something that we will think about, though. And
yeah, it's definitely a factor for sure.
Do I have to mild my tone here because I'm afraid I'm going to get hate mail? And a couple weeks back, I don't know if you guys saw this, but there was this huge Twitter thing going on with like myself and some other like Elder Scrolls fan site hosts and stuff like that. Dave did not drop the F-bomb in the article, no, but it was about as eloquently put as you could without dropping an F-bomb. but you know, we have been accused of being paid by the companies we write about. We have been accused of you know, being cheerleaders, and I hope that our articles that we write, because the articles and the shows are totally different entities. The shows are fan shows, so obviously there's going to be some more of a positive bias on the shows. That's admitted. Okay, Eve Arwin has always said that is the case. But when it comes to our writing, one of the things I have loved about every single person who writes for us is that we are critical when we need to be, but we're well willing to give praise when we have to be as well. And I hope that we get that across. I mean, if you read any of my PvP articles for Elder Scrolls, you can see that they wasn't all, you know, roses and sunshine. If I was getting paid by ZeniMax, that would have been all roses and sunshine.
Yeah, no.
So if we roundabout way to defend all of us, but you know, yeah. I feel I don't get a reason to talk about this enough. So
yeah. Yeah, if we were getting paid by ZeniMax, I would have been off the show years ago.
Right? We would have been like, see, guys, we got our checks. We're good.
But
or in Shank's case, he'd have just been taken off.
Brad, so is now a bad time to tell y'all that I am getting paid by Zoss?
Well, I mean, you're in my basement, so I can just come down and like steal your checks.
No, Dad!
It puts the lotion. Okay, so anyway. Yeah, man. I mean, it's a writer show. You're going to continue to see ridiculously good writing from us. Hopefully ridiculously good writing. And, yeah, fan posts, welcome. Send us an email and we'll tell you how to do that in a sec. But first, I guess it's my turn to be on this side of the segue for once. So Dave, how about that tweaked audio ad?
That's, oh my God. No, do it again. Segue. Okay. Proper segue. Come on.
Okay. So, Dave.
Why, yes, Shank.
what if I all of a sudden started tweaking out because the audio for my headphones sucks, so I have to go to Tweaked Audio to get some more?
Well, then you would have already been at Tweaked Audio, have already bought your product, and not been able to use our off-the-record, all-one-word at checkout, where you get 30% off of your order. You sit at home, shake your head, and lower it in shame for the loss of money that you could have saved by using off-the-record, all-one-word at checkout to buy Tweaked Audio's top-quality earbuds to take advantage of their free worldwide shipping and their unbeatable customer service and their lifetime warranty, which you would have gotten, again, 30% off by just using off-the-record at checkout. TweakedAudio.com.
Tweaked Audio!
You can collect California, parkour, natural, and shoe.
Shoe. good reference. People get it. Right. Anyway, it's come to time for us to announce the end of our show. I would just like to say that if you'd like to reach us on Twitter, find us at Totally Heroes. If you'd like to find me, I'm at DNForce. If you'd like to find Shank, he's at Shank Tank. If you want to find Zombie Brian, he's at Silent Fury 007. And of course, the Grand Con himself, at LOTR Lore. You can send us in an email at questgamingcommunity@gmail.com. Find our forums, questgamingcommunity.com, or we're also on Facebook at facebook.com/questgamingnetwork. What? You're one of the three people on Google Plus? We're there too. google.com/+questgamingnetwork. All right, real quick before we finish up the show, is there anything we'd like to talk about that's been new and improved? Or maybe new releases? Or anything news-wise that has come out over the last week or we can expect over this week?
I know, Bradford, you're working on a review for Stick of Truth.
Yeah, I should have it finished by middle of the week.
Excellent. And for those of you waiting for my Thief review, it's coming. It's just that I'm not going to rush. I'm just not rushing through the game because I need to play the game to get a complete review. But it will happen. And so will a Titanfall review, which I imagine will actually be less laborious because it's not a massively...
So who's doing the Titanfall review, me or you?
You know what?
Well, I think Brian should do.
You're playing it on the Xbox One, right?
Yeah, I am.
So why can't we do two?
I guess we can do that.
I think they should be treated as separately because they're two separate... I mean, they're same game, but they're separate platforms, which will inherently have an effect on how you experience the game anyway.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, no. So expect two Titanfall reviews. We're going to have a PC review and an Xbox One review.
Awesome.
Stay tuned also, because this Saturday I will be going to the Final Fantasy X-2 launch party in LA. So I've got your guys' questions written down, especially the questions that Dave and Supa have both requested. And hopefully I'll be able to talk to one of the devs there and get some answers for you guys. Otherwise, just expect some great pictures and some an art write about it. I know I'm not.
Final Fantasy. Fantasy.
Yes.
All right. Well, dude, that's gonna be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I cannot wait. But that's one reason why you won't see me on ESO most this weekend.
All right. Is there anything else we need to say before we finalize and wrap up the show? I've been taking naps.
I should change that. Hey, I got stuff for you to write.
Oh yeah,
I do.
For I'll send it my way. I'm
on home hit PC today.
No, actually, I've been
not PC. It's hitting the consoles. No one's written that up yet.
I've been writing up stuff for the ESO Guild.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's what I've been kind of focusing on over the past week, getting the back end stuff working.
And Moobot just plugged that, surprisingly enough.
Oh yeah, there you go. We have the vote that's up. It's been like almost 400 people voted on it already. We also have back end stuff for keeping the guild up and rolling. We have a bunch of, we got the forums fixed thanks to Supa. He got the forums fixed today, finalized. We have a bunch of stuff that has been finally put together, and it's been a ton of work, but yeah, hey, it's all good. But yeah, I think I'm finally freeing up to the point where I can start writing again. Yay!
Yes!
Chipokoma!
Chipokoma! That needs to be the new ad, guys.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, Shank.
Yeah.
If you could walk us out.
Sure. So, you guys, fans, everybody, can check out on the latest and greatest gaming news and how to join our awesome baller community. And it all starts right here at questgamingnetwork.com, where you can stay connected to all the latest news from Xbox, PlayStation, Rift, Elder Scrolls, Star Wars, whatever, man. If it's in the industry and we like it and it's huge news, big or small, whatever, we're going to cover it and put it on here because you're interested in it. Of course, we accept $10 donations. And if you decide to give us a $10 donation, this gets you a special mention. And please let us know which show you would like to be mentioned on. Why would you want to donate, Shank? Well, perhaps you have, like we are forming here, a new guild that you're creating or working on to create for a new upcoming MMO. Or perhaps you are a new fan site trying to get your name out there. $10 donations is a perfect way to do that. You can follow our other shows, such as Rift Off the Record, which records Sundays at 7 p.m. SWTOR Reforged, which are Mondays at 7 p.m., right before Totally Heroes, actually. On Thursdays at 7 p.m., we have Elder Scrolls Off the Record. And then Classic Elder Scrolls Night on Fridays at 9 p.m. And then on Saturdays, we have the Community Game Night, which is with the entire community team and, of course, you, the community. This is at 9 p.m. on all times Eastern. And I believe this past Saturday, they actually played Team Fortress 2, a game that I absolutely suck at. And all these times are, of course, Eastern. And you can find all the ways to hear our shows right here, questgamingnetwork.com. On the right-hand side, there's going to be a sidebar that says follow us. You got all your links on and different ways to access our shows, such as Stitcher Radio and iTunes, which you can access on your mobile device. And, of course, you can check out all our awesome gaming videos, how-to guides, and recorded Twitch streams at our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/questgamingnetwork. The community team does a great job of managing that. And, you know, with the upkeep, it's actually pretty ridiculous. And those Twitch streams and shows I mentioned, yeah, of course, all on Twitch. And we actually do stream 7 days a week on our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/questgamingnetwork. Don't know when you what time your favorite show is streaming, go to questgamingnetwork.com, right up here, click on schedule, and boom, you have a schedule of our 7 days streaming schedule broken down right here, all neat for you. Dave, back to you.
All right, thank you very much, and thank you very much, Bradford, for showing up today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys. That was awesome. It's always fun to talk with my fellow writers.
Yeah, it's good having you. All right. Again, keep Brian in your prayers. We're hoping for a swift recovery. This has been Totally Heroes, a Quest Gaming Network production in association with Middle Earth Network. My name's Dave D'Enforce Adams. Have a great weekend, everybody. Or week. Week, everybody. It's Monday. We're not going on the weekend. Have a great one, everybody.
Until next time, guys. Namaste.
We did it, you guys. We're totally heroes. Wow.
Bobo, Ie, Ninja ga imasu.